Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS, and I am net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. It's been going strong over 44 years, and every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all sit in front of our radios, and we chat with each other, and we teach each other, and we learn from each other. And I thank you all for joining me once again for this edition of the Limark Technical Net. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual link. Okay, if you want to reach me via email for mailbag questions, for TechNet puzzles, for volunteering a presentation on a topic of interest or in the news, or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to review some space and NASA-related story, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. You could, of course, directly email Paul. You can reach him by email spacenetreport@gmail.com. As always, I cut and paste interesting articles and YouTubes that I see throughout the week and put it on a link page. You can get to the link page by typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. We offer a chat room. Sometimes it's quiet. Sometimes it's loud. You never know. You get there by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. We offer an audio stream on the Internet of the Technical Net, and I leave it open the rest of the week so that you can listen into the Glen Oaks repeater traffic. You get to it by typing into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the audio stream. And every week I like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it's been around for a long while. It has seen over a million visitors, and it has in its files the archives of the Limark Technical Net. The archives go as far back as September 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who've either moved out of the area or unfortunately become silent keys over the years. Very interesting repository. Let me drop and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, we have your basic Sunday night technical net. We don't unfortunately have any guest speakers or visitors, what have you. I'll already tell you that there's really not much going on with artificial intelligence in the past week, at least that I've been able to discern. A few more articles about if there's a bubble, when there's a bubble, how bad the bubble will be, but not really anything other than that, at least that I've perused, but I'm sure other people peruse other things. I wouldn't call it a TechNet puzzle. I'll call it just an interesting observation, and I'm curious if anyone else out there made this observation or knows of this observation, so I'll be asking for a little bit participation from the audience if you know what I'm talking about, and if not, I'll explain it to you. Then we will go to our usual questions, comments, and topics. I'll ask people to hit that push to talk, give me the call sign, and whether it's a science-related or technology-related or amateur radio-related question, comment, or topic. Hopefully the first few will be amateur radio-related. We'll put it on the list and go down it, and that should hopefully take us to approximately 10:15. Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report, and that should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well. That's the plan. If the repeater behaves itself and my shack behaves itself, and I don't get thrown off of All-Star too many times. Usually the average is about two times I get thrown off of All-Star during one of these Sunday nights. So we'll see how things go. Let me drop for a second. I'll be right back with an interesting, at least I think, observation. I'm sure Paul will find this interesting. Okay. It's very few and far between that Morse code shows up in our common culture. Usually it's mostly stuff that hams talk about. Although I still remember back in the 1960s, there was an episode that began with the Enterprise receiving a Morse code signal. So that was exciting at the time, but they're few and they're far between. So in the past week or two, I cited another plot point that's basically Morse code, and I'm curious to see if any of our listeners here on the technical net are aware of it. So if you're aware of a television show plot point that involved Morse code, please make your name known.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul. I thought this would interest you.
There's so many shows that use Morse code, you know, as part of the, you know, getting out of a jam type of thing. There's so many of them.
Really? I'm unaware. It's, you know, like I said, I Star Trek, and there's been a couple of here or there, but, I mean, this is actually a plot device that they use. I don't really think it's a great place for the plot device, and if you think about it too much, it really doesn't make much of any sense whatsoever, but still, I don't know. I don't see that many of those. You remember the last one you saw?
Yeah, about 2 weeks. I record a lot of the old Mission Impossible shows. They're good. And sure enough, Jim Phelps, he's one of the main guys. He's supposedly, they're trying to, you know, they're always doing something, overthrowing a government or whatever. And he wound up paralyzed, some kind of drug that they gave him. So the only thing that he could move was his eyes, and sure enough, they started asking him questions, yes or no questions. They're not going to work. It'll take too long. Let's use Morse code. So he starts in, and sure enough, he was doing the letters. You know, the letter M. You see him close his eyes twice, you know, and holding it, and they actually went through quite a few letters. And of course, the short and the shout. They eventually say what he was saying. So that, that was a show from, I guess, what, 1960s or something. So that's just one. There's a lot of them. An older one, Johnny Get Your Gun. Another one with the guy moving his eyes. You know, that's a war movie where, you know, he gets blown to bits in a war, and the only way he can communicate is the same way. And, I don't know. Yeah. Another one where the passengers on an airplane and the terrorists are on board, and eventually they sneak a guy on, and he's able to rewire the lighting system where the jets following him can pick up the lights flashing on and off using the CW. I don't know. There seems to be a lot of them. That three that I can remember right off the bat. Back to you.
Okay, very good. But that's 1960. All of them are 1960, and I agree with you. 1960, we actually had a vague presence on television. You had the Munsters. He was amateur radio. But I'm talking about the last year or two. And anyone out there kind of notice it? I'd just be curious.
I know that CW has gotten very much more used, very popular because of POTA and SOTA. It sort of re-established the romance of CW.
Yeah, I understand that, Rich, but that's among us. It's really the civilians out there. It's very few and far between that they use Morse code these days, especially as a plot device instead of, some background noise or music type of phenomena. But, I mean, this is actually a plot device that's theoretically important to the ongoing plot of a relatively famous science fiction television series that's still being filmed today. It's an Apple production. I'll give everyone a hint.
WB2DU.
It's two people doubled. I think Alex is one of them. So this is not one that you're talking about, but in the video game Call of Duty Warzone, where you parachute 150 people onto an island and then one person survives, there was an Easter egg recently where you had to unlock like a special item. You had to pick up a phone in a certain building and it would beep Morse code at you. So the people streaming at it had their people in chat like looking up Morse code. The other place I saw it within the last couple of years was the Mercedes AMG pace car in F1 blinks AMG in Morse on its headlights as it starts the race.
Yeah, very good. I'm glad to hear it's making it into computer games and commercials. Someone else wanted to say something?
Yes, this is W2TVE, Walter. I was going to mention that at the end, I know it's not what you're asking, but maybe as an honorable mention, at the end of the movie Leave the World Behind, after the whole world's been decimated by losing our technology, a young woman escapes to a bunker and starts going on using ham radio on RIDI, which I thought was pretty cool. And that's how they were changing information.
Tough. Okay, thank you, Walter. What year was that filmed?
I don't really know. I think I saw it about 2 or 3 years ago when I just became a ham, and I was like, wow, look at this. We're on TV.
Tough. Okay, very good. The sighting that I had was for the television series Foundation. Now, the original book that it's somewhat loosely based upon is one of my favorite books. It's a trilogy from Isaac Asimov. He originally wrote it as a series of short stories in science fiction magazines, and they were compiled into a trilogy of three books. That was back in 1951, I think. And unfortunately, Isaac Asimov decided to shift from fiction books to nonfiction books for the next 25, 30 years. It took him until the 1980s in order to start writing more in the series of Foundation that he did because it made him loads of money after a time. Originally, it was owned by the magazine companies, but he bought back the rights, and it made a lot of money, got him a lot of awards, and became very famous. He had the trilogy back in 51, and he continued writing four additional books in the series, so it was a seven-book series. Got bought up by Apple and made into a television show. They're on their third season. They've been approved for a fourth season. At the end of this particular season, a robot character who's very important to the plot seems to be destroyed. They're melted down into just kind of a lump of iridium alloy and half of a metal skull. And as the robot seems to be fluttering in and out of existence, it flashes its one remaining eye light, a bright red light. And if you look closely, it actually sends in Morse code the word transferred, which is probably a big plot device for the fourth season. So that's the latest Morse code sighting that I've seen, at least.
If I could chime in, thank you. I'm only up to season one, but thank you. I've got to get there.
Yeah, it's a very good book. It's a very good television show. If you want it to be the book, you'll be disappointed, but it doesn't have to be the book. And I tried to present it in a way that doesn't really tell you a heck of a lot. But it's a good television show. So if you have Apple or access to Apple TV, consider trying it out. It has some interesting subplots and twists and all kinds of fun stuff. So I recommend it. Any other comments before we move on to the next segment?
Never mind, we can't forget the movie Contact. They really went overboard with that. That was good. Ham radio was heavily involved with that. And then NCIS, that's a cop show, you know. One of the episodes there, they did the Morse code bit as well. But they were out there, which is good.
Yeah, they're out there, but they're very few and far between, and usually they sort of make the Morse code obviously Morse code. You know, most of the Morse code seen in television dramas is audio. You know, it's kind of tricky when they just show you a flashing light that happens to be Morse code. And I have a problem with NCIS. I used to watch it a great deal. They actually did an episode that supposedly featured an amateur radio operator, except that you got the feeling that the writers for that particular episode didn't really know what an amateur radio operator was, because they had handles and they were very CB-ish. And also, unfortunately, he was one of the suspects of committing the crime. And in the end, he was innocent, but they kind of presented him as a social misfit, the schlub. So I was not particularly pleased with NCIS's treatment of our beloved hobby, personally.
Wasn't there about a kid who dreams of building spaceships, and the kid was a ham radio operator, something like that?
It's very possible. It was not an unusual thing to put in a plot back, especially back in the 50s. Robert Heinlein, who I another science fiction author that I really appreciated and read all of his stuff. In the 50s, he had not yet grown into the adult science fiction market, and he wrote mostly children's science fiction. And it was not uncommon. There were a cast of characters of either adolescents or early teenagers, and invariably one of the gang was an amateur radio operator. So that wasn't at all uncommon back in the 50s. Unfortunately, you know, the 60s, they had the Munsters and a couple other things, but when you start getting into the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, you don't see a heck of a lot of us, and when you do, they did a, what was it? I think they did a Family Guy. They did the Family Guy where the character that's a airline pilot fell into a depression and started to live in his basement, and they showed him having conversations out of a transmitter, and the idea was that he apparently had hidden himself to become a ham. So that was another unfortunate depiction of our hobby as depressed guys who had turned kind of antisocial. And at the end of the plot, it reset itself, and you never saw him being a ham again. So, I don't know. It's strange how culture kind of twists around and around. Anyway, I thought it would be interesting to start the net that way. If anyone has any questions, comments, or topics, again, I would prefer if the first few be amateur radio related, since we are all amateur radio operators, and this is a repeater. But we will accept science and technology questions and what have you. So feel free, hit that push to talk, and I'll put your name on the list.
Related to Morse code, K2GJE, who was that senator that was prisoner in North Korea that with his eyes said the word torture over?
Okay, I do not know. Does anyone else out there know Ed's question, answer to Ed's question?
John McCain, WS2N.
That's it.
Now, I think he said Korea.
Korea.
Yeah, McCain.
ADTDU.
Okay, that's bad. I already fell off All-Star. Ed, I guess you've stumped us all. Would you like to tell us the answer?
Thank you for the answer. I couldn't remember his name either. I think there was another situation where someone did something very similar. If I think about it, I'll let you know over.
Okay, Ed, I missed the answer.
John McCain, Senator John McCain.
Wasn't that the
AD2DU?
Yes. Yes, Alex?
I just Googled it quickly. Jeremiah Denton is the guy's name. It was in Vietnam that I think he's thinking of, that they televised the prisoners of war, and he blamed torture.
Oh, okay. So it was Vietnam all the time, not Korea. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay, very good, Ed. Thank you for the puzzle. And Alex, thank you for the answer. And anyone else want to put their name down tonight for questions, comments, or topics?
There was a situation in a hospital early in that radio on Long Island where a nurse got trapped in an elevator, and she used the button that rang the bell to send Morse code to let them know what her problem was.
Okay, you doubled, Ed, you doubled with someone else. We'll get their comment in a minute. Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know they did things like that with Morse code anymore, because I don't know how much you can depend upon people remembering their Morse code. It's probably just hams and Boy Scouts and maybe some Signal Corps retirees.
There was a patient in...
Okay, you fell out of the repeater, I think.
There was a patient in the hospital that was in the Signal Corps that read the nurse's message that was trapped in the elevator.
Okay, very good. So I kind of guessed the origin. Because the Signal Corps used to be a good source of a future amateur radio operators in the old days when there were a lot more people in the Army. And a lot more people in the Signal Corps, they would muster out, and they would still have a hankering for playing radio, and they came into the hobby. So I remember reading articles and magazines when I was a kid in QSB that had a lot of military interaction going on. Okay, very good. The other person who doubled with Ed, could you want to try again? Because Ed kind of covered your audio.
Yes, my name is Jim, call sign KB2FYH. As I recall as a kid, I'm 82 years of age, Sky King, does anyone remember Sky King? But Sky King would get on the Helicrafters transmitter, and there was the receiver next to it with the big speaker with H on it. And, you know, I had to laugh and think about it. Is someone sitting by a radio listening to him making a call? But anyway, that's one of the reasons why I got into ham radio. Only one of the reasons. So that's just my comment. If anyone remembers Sky King. Over.
Isn't that the guy with the rockets on his back?
No, I don't know what it was. No, it was something else. It was, I just don't remember. I just remember him on that Helicrafters radio. And I remember the big H on the speaker. Anyone out there? I'm 82 years of age, and I'm very active, and I love Morse code. I use Morse code as a brain exercise. I don't have the ability to handwrite anymore because of benign tremor, but I copy it in my head. I listen to it, and I use it as a brain exercise. Now, I don't know if I'm making any sense. Over to deck control.
WST, Sky King with the airplane, and he had the daughter, Penny.
Yeah, that's right.
Penny was a very popular name for the girl in distress. Yeah, Rich.
Yeah, put my name on the list, please.
Sure. else want to go on the list tonight?
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf.
Kilo Echo
listening.
2. Alpha Juliet Oscar supporting.
Okay, very good. Thank you both for supporting. Thank you, Sam. And thank you, Juan. And anyone with any questions, comments, or topics want to put their name on the list for tonight?
AD2DU.
Okay, Alex, I'll put you on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list? You'll have time later, but might as well put it on now if you're here. Okay, Rich, you're on. What do you got for us tonight?
Before I forget, a non-ham radio thing. If any of you guys are interested in stuff like this, there's a new documentary that just hit YouTube called How the Golden Gate Bridge Works. It's an hour and a half of 3D animation, and it's mind-boggling. How they built this thing when they did is just mind-boggling, and this documentary goes into every rivet and how they made that bridge and how it suspends and how it all the forces that are working on it, how they compensate for those. It's just a brilliant documentary called How the Golden Gate Works. That's what you have to search for on YouTube. Okay, now to ham radio. I've been a ham radio operator for 6 decades, and I have a lot of operational experience, but nothing like this. I have two ham radios. I have an Icom 7300 and a Yaesu G90. The reason why I got the G90, it's 20 watts and runs on battery, and I take it portable for POTA activations or just use it. Well, I live on the east end of Long Island, and there are a lot of fields out here, farmers' fields, potato and whatever. Well, I found a spot out here where it's right in the middle of 4 huge fields with no electric lines within a quarter of a mile. Let me let it drop. I put up an NFED half wave at the top of a 25-foot whip, and then drape it down for 66 feet to a 49-to-1 transformer. Well, the things that I hear on my G90, I have never heard at home on my 7300. And I'm just wondering if, because the noise level is so low out on these farm fields, that I can hear stations where I couldn't hear them from home in an HOA, you know, with plenty of underground electric wires and cable wires and whatever. I mean, on Friday, I spoke to, and this is on 10 meters, and I haven't heard anybody on 10 meters in a long time from home. I spoke to the Caribbean, a guy on a sailboat, Brazil, and then Wales, North Wales, all on 10 meters, and all S9 signals, and my signal was an S9 with 20 watts. And then I go to 20 meters. Let me let it drop again. And on 20 meters, I can't find an open frequency. And that's also not true at home. So I'm just wondering if the lack of noise, electric noise, can bring out signals that there's no way of me hearing them at home, but I can hear them in the middle of a farm field. That's really the question, Roy. Go ahead.
Well, you know, propagation is a complicated sort of thing. It just so happens I had my 10-meter net this morning, and it was as active as I've seen it in months. So it's... Part of it is simply the F1 and F2 layer doing what it's supposed to do instead of what it did during the spring and the summer and all the geomagnetic storms disrupt it. So part of it is simple propagation from the ionosphere, and part of it is probably also, as you mentioned, that the noise floor is lower. Not that difficult to actually do a little experiment. Take your G90, plug in your local antenna that you usually use with your 7300, and see what the signal strength for the noise floor is. And I'm sure it'll be orders of magnitude higher in your house than it is in the park.
I just did that this weekend. I hooked up the G90 in my house, and the noise floor is higher. It's about an S5, I guess. But it's not that much higher to be able to hear all these stations that I can hear from here. And the antenna is the same. It's an NFET half wave going into a 49:1. It's at the height of it. It's in a tree up about 40 feet, which is higher than the NFET half wave I can get in the field. I can only get it up about 20 feet. But I don't know. It's amazing. I can't believe that the G90 receiver cannot be that much better than the 7300. But anyway, I'm going back out there tomorrow and a couple of more times this week because it's just a beautiful spot. I mean, there's nobody around. And I don't know, these fields are, I don't think they're being used for agriculture. It's called the Halleckville Preserve, if anybody is listening that knows the North Fork at all. It's the Halleckville Preserve that I'm going on, and it's just amazing. I'll report back next week, but I have to really give it a workout this week to see if it is the noise level that's allowing me to hear many more stations than at home. Back to Ned.
Okay, very good, Rick. Yes, Ed.
Drive around your home QTH with your car radio turned to an AM station. I did it in the town where I live. There are some poles where the noise level is so large you can't even hear the AM station. And I used to have a phone number, I don't know if it's still good, that LIPA would report to these poles. Over.
Okay,
that's a good idea.
In the old days, there was a particular kind of ombudsman between hams and the electrical companies, and you could contact that guy, and he would have the company kind of check them out and repair and replace them, because they are a source of terrible RF at times, and there's only so many people to check on those things. So I assume that they would still respond to calls of checking out rather noisy transformer poles. I don't think it's the end of the Zhigo. You know, Chinese radios are not kind of known for their excellent front end. So I assume it's more of it's isolation from electrical devices and consumer equipment and fluorescents and all kinds of things that in an area that's populated, that has a lot of houses and a lot of electrical equipment. So I think it's that, and also the elevation of the antenna improves the ability to receive signals, so that's a plus. So I think it's more a matter of the local topology, the lack of RFI devices, and the raising the altitude of the elements that led to that. But, tell us, come back next week and tell us how your further experiments. I assume that you're going to have generally better reception there than you're ever going to have by your house.
Yeah, there's nothing, as far as the eye can see, in all directions. You can't see anything but farm fields. So, and right over the hill is the Long Island Sound. So that may have something to do with it also. I don't know. I will report back next week. I'll spend a couple of days, maybe 3 days, out in the farm fields, weather permitting, and I'll let you know how it comes out. Go ahead.
Okay. Sounds like it's going to be an interesting experiment. And the body of water helps as well. A lot of times, people would set up their mobile radios near bodies of water for my 10-meter net, and their signal was much stronger, and they were able to receive a lot better. So, flatlands without any obstructions, no conductors to speak of, and a large body of water makes for a very good area to operate in.
I know. I found the jewel of a spot. A jewel of a spot, and I'm protecting it. All right. All right, Roy, back to you. I'll report back.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Rich, as always, for your participation. Alex, what do you got for us tonight?
So, a couple quick questions. I'm in my new house, by the way, which, on the last topic, I'm in northern Westchester and Somers now. When I was in Astoria, I had an electrical line right out of my window that would wipe out 80 and 160. And now those bands are alive again for me. And also with AMDXing, which is a handheld radio, my auto scan out here kind of in the woods is getting 102, 100, or in the high 90s of hits. On the AM band. So, and I get, three different Chicago stations every night, Detroit, Atlanta, really all over. So going into a low-noise environment is way different. My problem with the Jaeger's front end was, let me let it drop for a second, was that in an urban environment, in the Jaeger G90, I had to run, I forget what you call it, to block out the whole AM band, or else I heard AM stations, just to fix the front end on that. My question is, in an attic antenna, if I have to choose either VHF, UHF, or HF, or just an AM receive, would either VHF or UHF versus HF go through the ceiling of an attic better? Because I know you said the VHF, UHF goes, shoots straight out into the sky and doesn't reflect. I didn't know if it was like a stronger megahertz or something.
Yeah, no, what I was talking about is the refraction of radio waves in an ionosphere. Atmosphere doesn't really refract RF that much, except with thermal inversions and ductile phenomena. But for the most part, it's the ionosphere that you get refraction, and you get less refraction the higher frequencies. So UHF and VHF isn't refracted enough to reflect back onto the Earth. So it gets bent a little bit out of shape, but it still goes on outer space, never to be heard from again. You pretty much, as long as there's no metallic coating on your, there's no insulation that has metallic layers on it, any of those frequencies should be reasonably good at getting through the wood. Wood doesn't really block too much, thankfully. So I think it's open to any frequency range that you prefer. It just is a little bit more efficient and easier to go for higher frequencies where the wavelengths are shorter. If you start to have antennas that are resident at requiring loading coils and such, that's going to diminish the efficiency of an antenna system like that.
Yeah, my thinking is I'd probably put VHF, UHF up there, if only because there is no coil I have to adjust. Who wants to be climbing in the attic all the time? My other quick question is, I got a POTA mast, one of the telescoping fiberglass, I think it is, one. What's the right way to affix something at the top of it? Because it seems just to be a skinny pole. Do you rubber band and have the top of your NFED half wave just affixed to it with a rubber band? There's not like a connector at the top. It's just a mast.
So I'm a little confused. What you have a whip. It's a telescoping whip, and you want to secure the other end to something? Is that the question?
It's not a whip antenna. It's literally a mast. So to, you know, have your, to get your NFED half wave, like, you know, 30 feet up in the air or whatnot, and then you have to have guying wires or whatever. But at the top of it, it's just a little skinny pole. How do you affix the wire to the pole properly? Normally, I just zip tie everything, but I didn't know if there was like a easy solution. I'm sure this is the most simple question for someone who does POTA all the time.
PC?
Yes, Rich?
I attach the end of the NFED halfwave to my 5-foot whip, and I use either painter's tape, which is easy to get off, because remember, I break it down after every day that I'm operating POTA, or I use electrical tape, and it holds it fine. Either the painter's tape, the blue painter's tape, or electrical tape will hold your wire to the top of your mast very easily. Go ahead.
Okay, that's a good idea, Rich. By the way, you probably even duct tape. I don't think there's any particular, you know, other than cellophane. Any kind of reasonably sturdy tape will suffice. If you want to use cable ties, you know, it could get a little expensive, you know, slightly more expensive than tapes. I would not use rubber bands. Rubber kind of ages on you and loses its elasticity. And, you know, unless you like to carry extras around, it's far better to just have a kind of a roll of tape or a couple of ties in your pocket.
Great, thank you. The painter's tape sounds like an excellent idea. I'll try that first and then electric tape and then figure it out. But that's good to hear what other people are doing. Thank you for the info, guys. AD2DU.
Okie doke, you're welcome, Alex. Again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net. We're still open for business. If anyone has any questions or topics or comments to make tonight, hit that push to talk.
Good evening. How you doing, Roy? This is Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf. I have a question for the group, if you may handle it. Has anyone had any trouble with local governments in putting up an antenna on their house? Thank you.
Okay, Sam, that's a good question. I remember when I was first planning to put up antennas on the roof, my sister sent me a copy of some outdated old citizens band law, that there was a limitation on the elevation and length of a CB antenna. You know, there's a lot of zoning questions out there. I'm curious if there used to be, there probably still is, a guy who lives in Manhattan who actually got a perp to put up a tower. It took him years, but he finally got it through the zoning board, and it's still there as far as I'm aware. But anyone have any good stories about government, local governments trying to tell you that you can't put up an antenna?
Well, I live in an HRA, and nobody's talked to me about Well, nobody knows, really. I have the NFED half-wave in a tree because you really can't see it. You can't even see it sloping down into my apartment. So nobody's mentioned that. I do have a 2-meter vertical attached to where the flagpole would go into. And thankfully, nobody's mentioned that either. But I just want to say, if anybody does have problems with local governments or whatever, I would suggest a magnetic loop for HF, a magnetic loop. And I've built two of them now. And if anybody has any questions about magnetic loops, you could ask me because I sort of know a lot about them now. WTBZ.
Okay, very good, Rich. I think you're thinking of Homeowners Association, which is an infamous organization. There's thankfully, there's not a lot of them here in England, but they're terrible. They're endemic down in the South. A lot of people have to get approval for what kind of grass goes into their lawn and what color they paint their garage doors.
VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, I remember Dick always used to say that nobody notices wire, that if you can, putting up a wire type of antenna rather than a vertical will generally be less noticeable. And yet the homeowners association can be very severe, even restricting the number of pink flamingos you can put on your lawn, so you have to be careful.
Yeah, it was my understanding that that Dick actually got a degree of pushback from his township about his antennas. I don't think they forced him to do anything in particular, but I think they did give him pause, you know, what they might come up with in the future.
Yeah, but I remember he always said that wire is much less noticeable than a vertical, or, you know, a pole or anything. And also, as the gentleman just mentioned before, using the flagpole to conceal your vertical, that works out very well.
It's in my Yes, Ed?
Iceland town has some rules on wire antennas. They have to be in the rear of your property. You can't have anything more than 18 inches outside the building, and you can't go more than 15 feet above your roof. When it comes to towers, that gets into the building department, and they need all kinds of permits for the tower's foundation over.
Oh, okay, that doesn't sound good. But, yeah, it's different from area to area to area, and there's more than a few articles on the subject. And that was the basis for the entire amateur radio congressional bill that was talked about 10 years ago. Congress never took it out of committee. It kind of bounced around, and fortunately, it got adjusted by the Homeowners Association. They demanded the ability to kind of rewrite bits of it, which once that happened, I was never quite sure of whether it was legit, but it never got out of committee. And after, I think, 8 years or 12 years, they finally just kind of said, we give up. We're going to put this on pause for the time being. And recently, the ARL has said that they want to bring that bill in one form or another out into Congress once again, although I do not believe it's even in committee yet. So when that might happen, I don't know, but the ARL is talking about it once again.
My wire, my NFED half-wave wire, is in the front of the house, and you absolutely don't know it's there unless you know it's there. Because sometimes I want to see if it's still up, if it detached from the tree, and I can't find it in the sky. And it takes me, you know, 20 seconds, and I know where to look. It's a black wire.
Okay, yeah, wire is certainly more camouflageable than you know, rods of aluminum or what have you. And I've mentioned more than a few times on the technical net that elevation, not only is elevation good for reception and transmission, but it's good for hiding in plain sight. It's less likely your neighbors will actually look upward than look straight ahead. So if you have antenna sitting on the ground, it's probably going to be seen more quickly than if you elevate it, you know, 20, 30 feet above the ground. So there's a bunch of different ways. Some people suggest particular colors to paint over the wires. I think black is fine. You know, I don't think there's a special camouflage color per se. It's just kind of keep it small, keep it as non-obvious as humanly possible. Yes.
Sorry. Trying to be amusing, in a way. put a kite on a thin black rope or wire, plastic wire or something. Put a kite on the end of it and shoot it up on top of a tree. And if the homeowners association ever say anything, they just say, "Well, I was trying to fly my kite one day, and it got caught in the top of the tree, and I was hoping that the wind would knock it down, and so I kept the lead in at my house, going through my window, in hopes that one day the wind will blow it down."
Okay, yeah, you could try that. Someone mentioned the flagpole. The flagpole was a very popular scam for many, many years. It was my understanding that most of these HOAs have kind of learned that trick, and the moment you start to put up a flagpole, they do some real close investigations. If they see any wires coming out of it, you're cooked. But, yeah, that sounds like an interesting one, although if a whole bunch of hams start to get their kites stuck in the tree, I wonder how long that scam is going to last, unfortunately. These homeowners associations talk to each other.
Should it catch the law to fly a kite on an HRO property area?
If they want to put it in the bylaws, I guess so. You know, these are guys who will have you rip up your lawn if it's the wrong seed, the grass seed.
I don't think they're going to bother with you. You can hardly see it. It's nothing that should perturb anybody. Just put it up and see what happens. All they can do is just tell you to take it down.
I mean, I'm sure one or two of those guys will just tell you it's an eyesore that you have to take it down within 30 days, or they'll bill you to have someone take it down. But I don't know. This is the problem. We kind of discussed this in the past, but we'll probably end up discussing it in the future, is usually guys who end up on homeowner associations, council, governors, whatever they are, usually are controlling, guys who, you know, their wives don't listen to them, their kids don't listen to them, so you'll have to listen to them, unfortunately. So I feel bad for guys who unfortunately joined one of those homeowners associations before they understood the depth and the breadth of the control that a few narrow-minded people tend to have towards, homeowners' rights. Well, I guess that's all that we got for you tonight, Sam. Have you been investigating the subject lately?
Yes. As you know, on October 8th, I'm giving a talk about hot topics in amateur radio. And I will be talking about antennas and legislation. Anyway, thank you, Roy, for putting the question out there for discussion. And I look forward to giving the presentation at October 8th at the Kings County Radio Club meeting.
Yeah, that's the Knights of Columbus at 1511 10th Avenue. Okay, this is AC2GS. Any questions, comments, or topics for tonight? We still have a long bit of the night ahead of us.
N1YDY with a comment.
Yes, Hank.
I don't personally believe this is true, but back in the 1980s, the Army said that gray was the color that you should use for an antenna, wire antenna, in order for it to be as least noticeable as possible, directly as opposed to either green, their favorite color, or black.
Oh, okay. I wonder, you know, I guess it sort of depends on the environment of what's the, well, you know, what the clouds are looking like and other factors, whether there's a lot of foliage in the area. I would assume that optimal colors kind of change over different topologies.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Like I said, it wasn't my experience when I looked up and was looking at wires back then, but I don't have a lot of experience doing it. It was just something I ran across back when I was in.
Oh, okay, yeah, I mean, it might be the right answer. You know, committees are not always famous for coming up with the right answers, but they come up with a answer, which is the most important part of a committee.
My biggest problem was, how do I get a guy to climb a tree up 40 feet without my neighbors noticing? And so far, so good.
Yeah, there's a lot of little gotchas. You know, you have to figure out what time of day most of your neighbors are either out or asleep or unconscious or just not staring at you. I mean, I used to have a neighbor who pretty much I thought he had a book where he filled in the times he saw neighbors passing one way or the other, because one time I bumped into him and he said, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks. And I've seen this guy almost. He, you know, he stays behind his Venetian blinds. Now, once again, I'm... Yeah, Rich?
You know, that reminds me, there's another tree about 30 feet or 40 feet from the tree the wire's in, and I fantasize about getting another wire up there and then slanting it down into the house and trying to use it as an inverted V. I wonder if something like that would work.
I see no reason why it wouldn't. I mean, you might be tempting fate a little bit more. But if you think not, inverted Vs have been very successful. My fan dipole is an inverted V. We talked to other people who had inverted V fan dipoles. There's nothing particularly wrong. Some guys try and get away and kind of screw Mother Nature, and they make the angle less than 45, less than 90 degrees. And you really shouldn't do that because you'll have near-field interactions with both sides, and it's not a good idea. At least 90 degree, if you can, 100 or 110 degree angle between the two legs of the inverted V.
But I think of it, it wouldn't be an inverted V, it would be a V. It would just be like together at a point in my house. So it would be a V who was coming from two trees 30 or 40 feet apart, and the wires both being attached like 30 feet up the tree, and then coming into my apartment. Would you say that I would need some kind of transformer for an antenna like that, or just hook up coax to each wire?
Okay, if you're going to have a center-fed dipole half-wave and put it in a In a V configuration, it should approximate an impedance of about 50, 60 ohms. So you shouldn't need a balun to transform the impedance. You might want an RF choke just so that you don't get common mode going through the transmission line. Problem with a V, and the reason why almost everyone who says anything about antennas and Vs says inverted V, is because the nature of a center-fed dipole, most of the RF current and the RF energy